Chapter 18, The Roach and the Fox. Suppose mine glows green or brown or something, Sophie yawned, scratching her legs. Everything in the Malice common room was made of burlap, the floors, the furniture, the curtains, like some barbarous itch chamber. I'm not doing it if it clashes with my clothes. Just focus on an emotion, barked the roach on her shoulder. Like anger. Try anger. Sophie closed her eyes. Is it glowing? No. What are you thinking about? The food here. Real anger, you oaf. Magic comes from real feelings. Sophie's face scrunched with effort. Deeper. Nothing's happening. Sophie's face darkened and her fingertip flickered hot pink. That's it. You're doing it. Agatha hopped excitedly. What are you thinking about? How infuriating your voice is, Sophie said, opening her eyes. Should I think about you every time? For the next week, the Malice common room turned into a cockroach's night school. The Mogrify spell only lasted 3 hours, so Agatha worked Sophie like a slave, driving her to make her finger glow stronger, to fog a room and flood a floor, to tell a sleeping willow from a weeping willow, and to even say a few words of giant. Sophie's ranks immediately improved, but by the fourth day, the long nights had taken their toll. My skin looks grey, Sophie croaked. And you're still ranked 68, so pay attention, berated the roach on her book, swan crest glistening on abdomen. The woods-wide plague began when Rumpelstiltskin stamped so hard the ground cracked. What made you change your mind? About helping me? And from the ground, a million poisonous bugs crawled out and infested the woods. Sickening scores of nevers and evers, Agatha said, ignoring her. They even had to close this school since the bugs were highly contagious. Sophie flopped back on the couch. How do you know all this? Because while you stare in mirrors, I read poisons and plagues. Sophie sighed. So they closed the school for bugs. Then what happened? This is where you've been sneaking to. Sophie swiveled to Hester at the door in black pajamas, flanked by Anadil and Dot. Homework, Sophie yawned, holding up her book. Need light. Since when do you care about homework? Said Hester, looking greasier than ever. Thought beauty was a full-time job, mimicked Anadil. Rooming with you is such inspiration, Sophie said, smiling. Makes me want to be the best villain I can be. Hester eyed her for a long moment. With a growl, she turned and led the others out. Sophie exhaled, blowing Agatha off the couch. She's up to something, they heard Hester snarl. Or she's changed, piped Dot, waddling behind. Roach on her book and she didn't even notice. By the sixth night of schooling, Sophie had risen to number 55. But each new day, she looked more like a zombie, skin sickly white, eyes glassy and bruised. Instead of a fancy new frock or hat, now she loped around with dirty hair and a wrinkled dress, trailing study notes all over the tower like breadcrumbs. Maybe you should get some sleep, Tedros mumbled to her during Yuba's lesson on insect cuisine. Too busy trying not to be the worst girl in school, Sophie said as she took notes.
Insects are often available when mealworms are not, Yuba said, holding up a live cockroach.
Look, you can't expect anyone to listen to you when you're ranked lower than Hort, Tedros whispered. When I'm number one, you'll ask me to forgive you. You get to number one, and I'll ask you anything you want, he snorted. Sophie turned to him. I'll hold you to that. If you're still awake.
First, remove the inedible bits,
Yuba said, and tore off the roach's head. Agatha shuddered and hid behind a pine shrub the rest of the lesson. But that night, she almost jumped from her thorax when Sophie told her what happened with Tedros. Ever boys always keep their promises, she said, bouncing on knobby roach legs. It's the prince's code of chivalry. Now you just have to get to number one, and he'll ask you to the... Sophie? Sophie answered with a snore. By the 10th day of Cockroach College, Sophie was only at number 40, and the circles under her eyes were so black she looked like a raccoon. By the next, she'd slipped back to number 65 when she napped during Lesso's test on Nemesis Dreams, fell asleep during Henchman, knocking Beazle off the belfry, and lost her voice in Special Talents for another low rank.
"Your talent is progressing,"
Sheba said to Anadil, who managed to make her rats grow a full 5 inches bigger. Then she turned to Sophie.
"Here I thought you were our great witch, Hope."
By the end of the week, Sophie was the worst villain in school again. "I'm sick," Agatha said, coughing into her hand. Professor Dovey didn't look up from her parchment-strewn desk.
"Ginger tea and 2 slices of grapefruit. Repeat every 2 hours."
"I tried that," Agatha said, increasing the volume of her coughs.
"Now is not the time to miss class, Agatha," Professor Dovey said, stacking papers under sparkling pumpkin weights. "Less than a month before the ball, and I want to make sure our 4th-ranked student is prepared for the most important night of her young life. Do you have an Everboy in mind?"
Agatha exploded in a paroxysm of hacks. Professor Dovey looked up, alarmed.
"Feels like plague," Agatha wheezed.
Professor Dovey went white. Quarantined in her room, Agatha the Roach now accompanied Sophie to all her classes. Tucked behind Sophie's ear, she whispered the first sign of a nemesis dream, answer, tasting blood, steered frost giant negotiations during henchmen, and told Sophie which scarecrows were good or evil in Yuba's forest challenge. On the second day, she helped Sophie lose a tooth in uglification, match monsters during Seda's exam, Lorkies, sweet talkers, harpies, child eaters, and determine which of Yuba's beanstalks was poisonous, which was edible, and which was Dot in disguise. There were hairy moments, of course. She almost ended up on the bottom of Hester's clump, barely survived a hovering bat, and nearly turned back into herself in Special Talents before finding a broom closet just in time. By the third day, Agatha hardly glanced at her good homework and spent all her free time learning evil spells. Where her classmates struggled to make fingers flicker, she could keep hers glowing by thinking about things that made her angry. School, mirrors, boys. Then it was just a matter of following a spell's precise recipe, and just like that, she could do magic. Simple stuff, nothing more than playing with water and weather, but still, real magic. She would have been paralyzed by the incredibility, the impossibility, except that it came so naturally. Where the others couldn't summon a drizzle, Agatha conjured thunderclouds in her room and splashed the odious murals off her wall with a squall of lightning and rain. Between sessions, she stole into bathrooms to try out new spells for suffering, the lights out jinx to briefly darken the sky, the sea swell curse to summon a giant wave. Time evaporated when she studied evil, so rife with power and possibility, she could never get bored. While waiting for Pollux to deliver her good homework one night, Agatha whistled while she doodled.
"What, pray tell, is that?"
She turned to Pollux in her doorway, head on a hare's body, staring at the drawing.
Oh, me at my wedding. See, there's my prince.
She crumpled the page and coughed. Any homework? After chastising her for slipping in the ever ranks, explaining every assignment thrice, and berating her to cover her mouth when she coughed, Pollux finally left in a circus of hops and falls. Agatha exhaled. Then her eye caught the crumpled doodle of herself flying through flames, and she saw what she'd been drawing.
Nevermore. Evil paradise.
"We have to get home," she mumbled. By the end of the week, Agatha had led Sophie on a magnificent winning streak in all her classes, including Yuba's trial tune-ups.
In these one-on-one duels, to prepare for the upcoming trial by tale, Sophie beat every person in her group using approved spells. Whether stunning Ruven with a lightning bolt, icing Beatrix's lips before she could call for animal help, or liquefying Tedros's training sword.
"Someone's been doing their homework," Tedros said, agog.
Hidden under Sophie's collar, Agatha blushed with pride.
"Before it was dumb luck. This is different," Hester griped to Anadil,
as they bit into a lunch of charred cow tongues.
"How is she doing it?"
"Good old-fashioned hard work," Sophie said, swishing by in shimmering makeup, ruby red hair, and a black kimono, sparkling with gems that spelled F is for focused.
Hester and Anadil choked on their tongues. By the end of the third week, Sophie was up to number 5, and her lunchtime lectures had resumed due to popular demand. So had her black-robed fashions, bolder and more extravagant than before, in a grand pageant of scalloped plumage, fishnet bodices, faux monkey fur, sequined burkas, leather pantsuits, powdered wigs, and even a chainmail bustier.
"She's cheating,"
Beatrix hissed to anyone who would listen. "Some rogue fairy godmother or time-turning spell. No one has time to do all this." But Sophie had time to design a satin jumper with matching nun's wimple, a sparkled clamshell dress, and matching shoes for every new look. She had time to beat Hester in the Uglifier Ballroom Challenge, write a report on Wolves versus Man-Wolves, and prepare lunchtime lectures on Wicked Success, Ugly is the New Beautiful, Building Your Body for Sin. She had time to be One Girl Fashion Show, Rabble Rouser, Rebel Priestess, and still wrestle her way past Anadil to number 2 in the rankings. This time, Beatrix couldn't stop Tedros from falling for Sophie, but Tedros tried valiantly to stop himself.
"She's a never. So what if she's beautiful, or smart, or creative and kind and generous and..."
Tedros took a deep breath. "Evers can't like nevers. You're just confused." He felt relieved when Yuba hosted another good or evil challenge. This time, the gnome turned all the girls into blue pumpkins and hid them in the forest's voluminous patch.
"Just find an ever," Tedros scolded himself. "Find an ever and forget all about her."
"This one's good,"
Hort yelled and flicked a blue shell. Nothing happened. The other boys couldn't tell the difference between pumpkins either, and started debating the merits of each.
"This is not a group assignment,"
Yuba bellowed. Clinging to Sophie's blue vine, Agatha's roach watched as the boys split up. Tedros headed west towards the turquoise thicket and stopped. Slowly he turned to Sophie's pumpkin.
"He's coming," Agatha said.
"How do you know?" Sophie whispered.
"Because that's the way he looked at me."
Tedros walked up to a pumpkin.
"This one. This one's an ever."
Yuba frowned.
"Look closely first."
Tedros ignored him, clasped its blue skin, and in a burst of glitter dust, the pumpkin turned into Sophie. A 16 puffed in slimy green smoke over the prince's head, and a 1 in black over Sophie's.
"Only the best evil can disguise as good,"
Yuba commended, with a wave of his staff, and erased the F off Sophie's dress once and for all.
"And as for you, son of Arthur, I suggest you study your roles. Let's hope you don't make such a terrible mistake when it counts."
Tedros tried to look ashamed.
"We can't find any," a voice called.
Yuba turned to see all the boys with low ranks smoking over their heads.
"Should have marked them,"
he sighed, and waddled into the patch, jabbing pumpkins to see if they yelped. With the gnome gone, Tedros let himself smile. How could he tell a teacher he didn't care about rules? Rules that had led him to that god-awful Agatha twice. For the first time, he had found a girl who had everything he wanted. A girl who wasn't a mistake.
"I'd say you owe me a question, son of Arthur."
Tedros turned to find Sophie wearing the same smile. He followed her eyes to the Nevers scoreboard above the forest, where Albemarle had pecked her name at the very top. The next day, she found a note in her lunch pail. "Wolves don't like foxes. Blue Brook at midnight. Tea."
"What does it mean?" she whispered to the roach in her palm.
"It means we go home tonight," Agatha gushed, antennae beating so fast that Sophie dropped her. The roach paced the mildewed burlap of the Malice common room floor, eyeing the clock as it ticked towards midnight. At last she heard the door open, and Sophie entered in a seductive black sheath dress, accented with long black gloves, beehived hair, a necklace of delicate pearls, and black-tinted spectacles. Agatha nearly burst her carapace. "First, I told you to be on time. Second, I said don't dress up. Look at these glasses. Aren't they chic? Saves your eyes from the sun. You know, these Evergirls sneak me all sorts of things like this now. Pearls, jewels, makeup to add to my ensembles. At first I thought they were good deeds, and then I realized, no, they just like seeing their things on someone more glamorous and charismatic. Only it's all so cheap. Gives me a rash." Agatha's antennae curled. Just lock the door." Sophie bolted the latch. She heard a crash and spun to see Agatha red-faced, pale body wrapped in a burlap curtain.
"Must have mistimed it," Agatha spluttered.
Sophie looked her up and down. "I prefer you as a roach." "There has to be a way to get new clothes when you turn back," Agatha grouched, wrapping herself tighter. Then she saw Sophie fondling Tedros's note. "Now listen, don't do anything stupid when you meet him tonight. Just get the kiss and..."
"My prince came for me," Sophie mooned, sniffing the parchment. "And now he's mine forever. All thanks to you, Agatha."
She gazed up lovingly and saw her friend's expression.
"What?"
"You said forever."
"I meant tonight. He's mine tonight."
They were both silent. "We'll be heroes when we get back to Gavaldon, Sophie," Agatha said softly. "You'll have fame and riches and any boy you want. You'll read about Tedros in storybooks for the rest of your life. You'll have the memories that he was once yours." Sophie nodded with a pained smile. "And I'll have my graveyard and cat," Agatha mumbled.
"You'll find love someday, Agatha."
Agatha shook her head. "You heard what the schoolmaster said, Sophie. A villain like me can't ever find love."
"He also said we couldn't be friends."
Agatha met Sophie's lucid, beautiful eyes. Then she saw the clock and jolted to her feet.
"Take off your clothes."
"Take off my what?"
"Hurry, we'll miss him."
"Excuse me, but I'm sewn into this dress."
"Now!"
A few minutes later, Agatha sat next to Sophie's clothes, head in hands.
"You have to do it with conviction."
"I'm naked behind an ugly couch. I can't do anything with conviction, let alone make my finger glow and turn into a rodent. Can't we pick a more appealing animal?"
"You're 5 minutes from losing your kiss. Just picture yourself in its body."
"How about a lovebird instead? It's more me." Agatha grabbed Sophie's spectacles, bashed them with her clump, and threw them over the couch.
"Want me to do the same to the pearls?" Thump.
"Did that work?" Sophie's voice said.
"I don't see you," Agatha said, whipping around. "For all we know, you turned yourself into a newt."
"I'm right here."
Agatha turned and lost her breath.
But you're more me," Sophie breathed. A ravishing plush pink fox with sparkly fur, bewitching green eyes, succulent red lips, and a bouncy magenta tail. She clasped the pearl necklace around her neck and admired herself in a shard of broken glass.
"Will he kiss me, darling?"
Agatha stared, mesmerized. Sophie watched her in the mirror.
You're making me nervous.
The wolves won't bother you, Agatha babbled as she unlocked the door. They think foxes carry disease, plus they're colorblind. Just keep your chest to the ground so they don't see the swan.
Agatha?
What? You'll miss him.
Will you come with me?
Agatha turned. Gently, Sophie curled her tail around her friend's hand.
We're a team, she said.
Agatha had to remind herself she didn't have time to cry. Sophie the fox pattered quietly through the blue forest, past willow trees shimmering with sleeping fairies, and wolf guards who shrank from her as if she were a snake. She skirted sapphire ferns and twisty oaks of the turquoise thicket before slinking to the top of the bridge, overlooking a moonlit brook.
I don't see him,
she whispered to the roach snuggled into her neck's pink fur. His note said he'd be here.
Suppose Hester and Annadil played a trick.
Who are you talking to? Two blue eyes glowed in darkness across the bridge. Sophie froze. Say something, Agatha hissed in her ear. Sophie couldn't. I talk to myself when I'm nervous, Agatha whispered.
I talk to myself when I'm nervous, Sophie said quickly.
A navy blue fox stepped out of the shadows, swan twinkling on its puffed chest. I thought only princesses get nervous. Not the best villain in school. Sophie gaped at the fox. It had Tedros's tight muscles and half-cocked grin. Only the best good can disguise as evil, Agatha intervened. Especially when it has love to fight for.
Only the best good can disguise as evil, Sophie said, especially when it has love to fight for.
So it really was a mistake all along, Tedros said, circling her slowly. Sophie flailed for words. I had to play both sides in order to survive, Agatha rescued.
I had to play both sides in order to survive, echoed Sophie.
She heard Tedros's step stop. Now, according to the Prince Code, I have a promise to fulfill. His fur brushed against hers. What would you like me to ask you? Sophie's heart choked her throat. Do you see who I am now? Agatha said.
Do you see who I am now?
Sophie breathed. Tedros was quiet. He lifted her chin with his warm paw. You do know this will throw both schools into upheaval. Sophie gazed into his eyes, hypnotized. I do, whispered the roach.
I do, said the fox.
You do know no one will accept you as my princess, said Tedros.
I do. I do.
You do know you will spend the rest of your life trying to prove you're good.
I do, said Agatha. I do, said Sophie.
Tedros moved closer, and their chests touched. And you do know I'm going to kiss you now. Both girls gasped at the same time, as iridescent brook water lit up the fox's blue and pink faces. Agatha closed her eyes and said goodbye to this world of nightmares. Sophie closed her eyes too and felt Tedros's warm, sweet breath as his tender mouth grazed her lips.
But we should wait, Sophie said, pulling away.
Agatha's bug eyes flashed open. Sure, of course. Obviously, Tedros stammered. I'll, walk you to your tunnel. As they walked back in silence, Sophie's pink tail curled around his. Tedros looked at her and surrendered a smile. Agatha watched all this, swelling red. And when the prince finally vanished into his tunnel, she vaulted onto Sophie's nose. What are you doing? Sophie didn't answer. Why didn't you kiss him? Sophie said nothing. Agatha dug her pincers into Sophie's nose. You need to run after him. Go now. We can't get home unless you kiss. Sophie brushed Agatha off her face
and disappeared into the dark tunnel. Writhing in dead leaves, Agatha finally understood. There was no kiss, because there would never be a kiss. Sophie had no intention of them going home. Ever.
Chapter 19. I Have a Prince. The faculty of the School for Good and Evil had seen many things over the years. They had seen pathetic students in the first year end richer than kings. They had seen class captains flame out by the third year and end as pigeons or wasps. They had seen pranks, protests, and raids, kisses, vows, and impromptu love songs. But they had never, ever seen an ever and a never hold hands in the lunch line.
"Are you sure I won't get in trouble?" said Sophie, noticing them glaring from balconies.
"If you're good enough for me, you're good enough for a basket," said Tedros, pulling her forward.
"I suppose they should get used to it," Sophie sighed. "I don't want any trouble at the ball."
Tedros's hand stiffened on hers. Sophie turned bright red.
"Oh, after last night, I just assumed..."
"The Everboys took an oath we wouldn't propose before the Circus of Talents," Tedros said, tugging at his collar. "Espada said it's tradition to wait until the circus crowning, the night before the ball."
"The night before?" Sophie choked. "But how do we match colors and plan our entrance and..."
"This is why we make the oath."
Tedros took his wicker basket of lamb sandwiches, saffron couscous, and almond mousse from a green-haired nymph.
"And one for the lady as well."
The nymph ignored Sophie and held out a basket to the next ever. Tedros seized the handle.
"I said, one for the lady."
The nymph tightened its grip on the basket.
"Lamb is hard to digest anyway," Sophie fretted.
But the prince held on until the nymph surrendered the basket with a grunt. Tedros handed it to Sophie.
"Like you said, they better get used to it."
Her eyes widened.
"You'll take me?"
"You're so beautiful when you want something."
Sophie touched him.
"Promise me," she said, breathless. "Promise me you'll take me to the ball."
Tedros looked down at her soft hands, holding the laces of his shirt.
"All right," he exhaled finally. "I promise. But tell anyone, and I'll put a snake in your corsage."
With a squeal, Sophie threw herself into his arms. She could plan her gown after all. With that, the number one ever and number one never, storybook enemies in body and soul, sat hand in hand under a towering oak. Tedros suddenly noticed all the evers glaring at him, stunned by his disloyalty. Sophie saw nevers, who she had preached to for weeks about villain pride, glower at her, betrayed. Tensing, she and Tedros bit into sandwiches at the same time.
"Is the witch still contagious?" Tedros said quickly. "It's her first day back in class."
Sophie glanced at Agatha, hunched against a tree, staring right at her.
We don't really talk."
"Leech, isn't she? Thinks she's brains to your beauty. Little did she know you have everything."
Sophie swallowed.
"It's true."
"One thing's for sure. Won't be picking that witch in a challenge again."
"How do you know that?"
"Because now that I found my princess, I won't let her go," said her prince, gazing into her eyes.
Sophie suddenly felt sad.
"Even if it means waiting a lifetime for a kiss?" she said, almost to herself.
"Even if it means waiting a lifetime for a kiss," Tedros answered, taking her hand.
Then he cocked his head.
"I'm assuming this is a hypothetical question."
Sophie laughed and buried her head in his shoulder in time to hide the tears. She'd explain one day, when their love was strong enough.
On the balconies of the two schools, the faculty watched the lovebirds nuzzle in the sun. The good and evil teachers gave each other dark looks and went back to their chambers. Sitting in chilly shade, Agatha didn't make any sudden moves either. Like the teachers, she knew this romance was doomed. Something was in their way. Something Sophie had forgotten. Something called trial by tale.
To win a trial by tale is one of the greatest honors at the school for good and evil, Pollux declared, head back next to Castor's on their massive dog's body. With the 15 forest group leaders behind him, Pollux peered down at the students, gathered after breakfast in the Theatre of Tales. Once a year, we send our best evers or nevers into the Blue Forest for a night to see who lasts until morning. To win, a student must survive both the schoolmaster's death traps and the other side's attacks. The last ever or never standing at dawn is declared the winner and given 5 additional first place ranks. Pollux raised his nose snootily. As you know, Good has won the past 200 trials. Good burst into a chant of, "Evers rule, Evers rule, Evers..."
"Are stupid, arrogant fools," Castor boomed,
and the Evers shut up. "Now, a week from today, each forest group will send its top ever and never into the trial," Pollux sniffed. "But before we announce the competitors, let us briefly review the rules." "Heard Beatrix took first in good deeds yesterday," Chadwick whispered to Tedros. "That never girl turning you soft." "You try mending a dove wing with my strength," Tedros retorted. Then his face softened. "Do the boys really hate me?"
"Can't be messing with a never, mate," Chadwick said, grey eyes stern. "Even if she is the fairest, smartest, most talented girl in school."
Doubt sank Tedros into his seat. He bolted upright.
"I can prove she's good. I can prove it in the trial."
"Beatrix or Agatha might have your group's spot," Chadwick said. Tedros's chest tightened. He caught Sophie beaming at him from the evil pews. Their future together depended on him making the trial. How could he fail her?
"According to the rules, there can be more than one winner of a trial by tale," said Pollux. "However, those who last until dawn must split the first place ranks. Thus, it is in your interest to eliminate your competition. Naturally, the schoolmaster prefers a single winner and will conjure as many obstacles as he can to ensure it. For the rest of the week, all classes will be dedicated to preparing these 15 evers and 15 nevers for their night in the Blue Forest," the dog continued, as students twittered over who these would be. "In-class challenges will be restricted to these competitors only. Those with the worst scores for the week will enter the trial first, while those with the best will enter significantly later. This is, of course, a tremendous advantage. The less time you spend in a trial by tale, the more chance you come out alive."
Students stopped talking. Pollux realized what he said and forced a laugh.
"It's a figure of speech. No student dies in a trial. How ludicrous."
Castor coughed.
"But what about..."
"The competition is completely safe," Pollux said, smiling down at the children. "You will each have a flag of surrender. If you find yourself in mortal danger, drop it to the ground, and you will be rescued unharmed from the Blue Forest. You will learn more about the rules in your various classes, but now I cede the floor to the forest group leaders, who will announce this season's trial competitors."
A tiny lily nymph in a dress of emerald vines stepped forward.
"From Group 9, Rena will represent good, and Vex will represent evil."
Rena curtsied to Ever Cheers, while Nevers grumbled that Vex and his pointy ears were lucky to be in a weak group. An ogre announced Tristan and One-Eyed Arachne from Group 7, followed by more leaders who named dark-skinned Nicholas and Anadil from 4, Kiko and green-hued Mona from 12, Giselle and Hester from 6. Sophie goggled at Tedros through it all, daydreaming of life as his queen. Would Camelot have enough closets, mirrors, cucumbers? Then Yuba stepped forward. Sophie looked over at Tedros and Beatrix, both hanging on the gnome's next words. "Please let him beat that sour cream puff," she prayed.
"From Group 3, Tedros will represent good," Yuba said.
She exhaled in relief.
"And Sophie will represent evil."
Sophie massaged her ears. She'd heard wrong, surely. Then she saw the smirks. "Suppose that's the problem with dating a villain," Chaddick said. "It's all love and kisses until you have to kill them." Tedros ignored him and focused on his plan to prove Sophie good. Thank God his father was dead, he thought, sweating through his shirt. What he was about to do would have stopped his heart. As Evers left through the west doors, Nevers through the east to trek back to evil, Sophie remained shell-shocked on a blackened pew. A shadow moved into hers.
"All I asked is that you stay out of my way."
Hester's breath chilled the back of her neck.
"And here you are, number one villain, making fools of us all. Well, you forgot a villain's story doesn't end happily, dear. So let me remind you how it ends. First you, then your prince. Dead."
Cold lips grazed Sophie's ear.
"And that's no figure of speech."
Sophie whipped around. No one there. She jolted to her feet, slammed into Tedros, screamed, and collapsed in his arms. "She's going to kill us. You, then me, or me, then you. I can't remember the order. And you're an ever, and I'm a never, and now we fight against each other." "Or we fight with each other." Sophie blinked. "We do?" "Everyone will know you're good if I protect you," said Tedros, still a bit sweaty. "Only a true princess can earn a prince's shield."
"But they'll target you. Everyone thinks I'm evil."
"Not if we win," Tedros said, grinning. "They'll have to make you an ever." Sophie shook her head and hugged him tight.
"You are my prince. You really are."
"Now, go win your challenges so we enter the trial at the same time. You can't be in there without me." Sophie drained of blood.
But
what? You're the best never by a mile."
"I know, it's just..."
Tedros held her chin up, forcing her to look into his crystal blue eyes. "First place in every challenge. Deal?" Sophie nodded weakly. "We're a team," said Tedros, dimpling, and with a last brush of her cheek, he left through the ever doors. Sophie trudged across the stage to the never doors and paused. She turned slowly. Agatha sat in the pink pews, all alone.
"I told you I belong here, darling," Sophie sighed. "You just wouldn't listen."
Agatha said nothing.
"Maybe the schoolmaster will let you go home alone," Sophie said.
Agatha didn't flinch.
"You need to make new friends, Agatha."
Sophie smiled gently.
"I have a prince now."
Agatha just stared into her eyes. Sophie stopped smiling.
"I have a prince."
She slammed the door behind her. In uglification, Manly asked the competing 15 nevers to conjure a disguise that would scare off an ever at first sight. Hester's potion made her whole body explode with spikes, anadils turned her skin so thin all her blood vessels shined through. Meanwhile, Sophie bashed tadpoles to give herself shingles again, but somehow gave herself a spiral horn and glittered horsetail instead.
"Because what's scarier to a princess than a unicorn?" snarled Manly.
In Henchmen, the trial nevers had to tame a fire giant, a 9-foot hunk of hot orange skin and flaming hair. Sophie tried to read his thoughts, but all his thoughts were in giant. Luckily, she remembered some of the giant words Agatha had taught her. Fire giant.
"And why shouldn't I kill you?"
Sophie.
"I know this horse."
Fire giant.
"I see no horse."
Sophie.
"It is as vast as your undergarments."
Castor intervened before the giant ate her. Then Lady Lesso asked the trial nevers to name a
spell that can only be undone by the one who casts it. Answers?
Shivering, the nevers held up carved ice tablets. Hester, petrification. Anadil, petrification. Arachne, petrification. Sophie, special spell.
"If only love was the answer to everything," said Lady Lesso, handing Sophie another 15 out of 15.
"What happened?" said Tedros as he pushed her through the Evers line.
"Just a slow start."
"Sophie, you can't be in that forest without me." She followed his eyes to scowling Evers. Come the trial, they'd all be out for revenge. "Just do what you were doing before," Tedros begged. Sophie gritted her teeth as she walked back to her room. If Agatha could do well in the school for good, then she could do well here. Yes, she'd boil her toad eyes, she'd learn her giant, she'd cook a child if she had to, or supervise at least. Nothing would stop her from her ever after. She puffed her chest, stormed through her door, and froze. Her bed had disappeared. The mirror had been shattered, and over her head hung all her old outfits, noosed and mutilated, like headless corpses. On her bed, Anadil looked up from killing pretty girls. Hester looked up from killing even prettier girls. Sophie barreled into the top floor office.
"My roommates want to kill me."
Lady Lesso smiled back from her desk.
"That's the spirit."
The door closed magically in Sophie's face. Sophie cowered in the dark hall. Last week, she had been the most popular girl in school, and now she couldn't even go back to her room. She wiped her eyes. It didn't matter, did it? Soon she'd be switching schools, and all of this would be behind her. She had the boy every girl wanted. She had her prince. Two stupid witches were no match for true love. Voices echoed above. She ducked into shadows.
"Hester said whoever kills Sophie during the trial will be her hench captain next year,"
Arachne said as she descended the stairs.
"But it needs to look accidental, or we'll get expelled."
"We have to beat Anadil to it,"
Mona said, green skin flushing.
"Suppose she kills her before the trial."
"Hester said during the trial. Even Vex and Brone know that. Did you hear their plan to kill her? They searched the Good Lake to find those leftover eggs. That girl is so dead."
"Can't believe we listened to that traitor's lectures," Mona seethed. "Next thing you know, she'd have us wearing pink and kissing Evers."
"She humiliated us all, and now she'll pay,"
Arachne said, narrowing her eye.
14 of us, one of her. Odds aren't in her favour."
Their cackles pealed through the damp stairwell. Sophie didn't move from the dark. It wasn't just her roommates. The whole school wanted her dead. There was nowhere safe now. Nowhere except... At the end of a dark, stale hall, The door to room 34 cracked open after the third knock. Two beady black pupils peered out.
"Hello, handsome," Sophie cooed.
"Don't even try it. You're a prince lover. You're a two-timer. You're a..." Sophie held her nose, breezed by Hort, and locked him out of her new room. Hort pounded and wailed outside for 20 minutes before Sophie finally let him back in.
"You can help me study until curfew," she said, spritzing the room with lavandula. "But no sleeping here." "This is my room," Hort sulked, plopping to the floor in black pajamas dotted with frowning green frogs. "Well, I'm here, aren't I? And boys and girls can't be roommates, so it certainly can't be your room," said Sophie, tucking into his bed.
"But where am I supposed to stay? I hear the Malice common room is quite comfortable."
Ignoring Hort's whimpers, Sophie sank into pillows and held a candle to his class notes. She had to win all her challenges tomorrow. Her only hope to survive the trial was to go in with Tedros and hide behind his shield the whole time. To humiliate an enemy, turn him into a chicken. Banta Pereo de Rosti, she squinted. "Is that right?"
"Sophie, how do you know you aren't a villain?"
Hort yawned, hunched on the burned floor.
"I look in the mirror."
"Hort, your penmanship is foul." "When I look in the mirror, I look like a villain."
"Probably means you're a villain."
"Dad told me villains can't love, no matter what. That it's unnatural and disgusting."
Sophie made out scratchy words. "To freeze an ever in ice, make your soul cold."
"So I definitely can't love," Hort said.
"Colder than you thought possible, then say these words."
"But if I could love, I'd love you."
Sophie turned. Hort was snoring softly on the floor, button flap lit up with angry green frogs.
"Hort, you can't sleep here," she said.
Hort curled up tighter. Sophie threw off her covers, stamped up to him.
"Take that pan," he babbled softly.
Sophie watched him, shivering and sweating in his little ball. She slid back under the musty covers, candle to notes. She tried to study, but his snuffles lulled her into a trance, and before she knew, it was morning. The second day went as well as the first, with Sophie earning 3 more last places, the third of which came in henchman, when she couldn't make her finger glow in time to disarm a stink troll. She could see veins swell in Tedros's neck as he yanked her through the lunch line, holding his nose.
"Should I lose on purpose, or do you want to go into the trial 3 hours early?
"I'm trying as hard as I can."
"The Sophie I know doesn't try. She wins."
They ate in silence.
"Where's her fairy godmother now?"
Sophie heard Beatrix crow. Across the field, Agatha did homework with Kiko, back turned completely. The next day, the challengers spent their first 2 sessions being fitted for their trial uniforms, dark blue tunics of silky iron mesh, and matching hooded wool cloaks lined with red brocade. With 30 students in the same cloaks, it would be impossible to tell Evers from Nevers, even if one could see blue cloaks in a blue forest. When it came to clothes, Sophie was normally at full attention, but today she had her head buried in Hort's notes. Lady Lesso's class was next, and she needed 1st place.
"A villain kills for 1 purpose, to destroy his nemesis. The one who grows stronger as you grow weaker. Only when your nemesis is dead will you feel quenched," said the tight-skinned teacher, clacking through the aisle. "Of course, since only the best nevers will have nemesis dreams, most of you will venture your whole life without taking another's life. Consider yourself lucky."
Killing requires the purest evil. None of you are pure enough to kill yet.
Sophie heard grumbles in her direction.
But since the trial by tale is a harmless exercise,
Lady Lesso smiled at her,
why not prepare with my favorite challenge?
She conjured a phantom princess with brown curls, blushing dimples, and a smile sweeter than a baby's.
Murder practice. Whoever kills her the cruelest way wins. Finally, something useful,
Hester said, eyeing Sophie. Though the chamber was colder than ever, Sophie shined with sweat. With the princess locked behind a door and suspicious of strangers, the trial nevers had to be creative to kill her. Mona uglified herself into a peddler and gifted the princess poisoned lipstick. After Lady Lesso conjured a new maiden, Anadil knocked on her door and left a carnivorous bouquet outside it. Hester shrank into a cute squirrel and offered her victim a glittery balloon.
Why, thank you,
the princess beamed as the balloon pulled her up, 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 into the razor-sharp icicles on the ceiling. Sophie closed her eyes through most of this.
Who's next?
Lady Lesso said, sealing a new princess behind the door.
Oh, yes, you.
She drummed long red nails on Sophie's desk.
Tsk, tsk, tsk.
Sophie felt sick. Murder. Even if it was a phantom, she couldn't mur... The beast's dying face flashed, and she blanched. That was different. He was evil. Any prince would have done the same.
Another fail, it seems,
Lady Lesso leered. Meeting her eyes, Sophie thought of Tedros losing faith in her. She thought of 14 villains convinced they were pure enough to kill. She thought of her happy ending slipping away. The Sophie I love doesn't try. Jaw set, she stormed to the door, past her surprised teacher, finger glowing pink. To freeze an ever in ice, she pounded on the door. Make your soul cold. The door opened, and Sophie's finger glow dimmed. It was her own face staring back at her, only with the long blonde locks she had before the beast. To win this challenge, she had to kill herself. Sophie saw Lady Lesso smirking in the corner.
May I help you?
Asked Princess Sophie. Just a ghost. Sophie gritted her teeth and felt her finger burn once more.
You look like a stranger, said the princess, blushing.
Colder than you thought possible. Sophie pointed her glowing finger at her.
Mother said never talk to strangers, said the princess anxiously.
Say it. Sophie's fingertip flickered. She couldn't find the words.
I should go. Mother's calling.
Kill her. Kill her now.
Goodbye, said the princess, closing her door. Banta, Pareo, De Rosti.
Poof. The princess turned into a chicken. Sophie grabbed it in her arms, hurled a chair, shattered the iced window, and flung the bird into open sky.
Fly, Sophie! You're free!
The chicken tried to fly, then realized it couldn't, and plummeted to its death.
For the first time, I feel sorry for an animal,
Lady Lesso said. Another 15 spat in Sophie's face. Perhaps the only thing Sophie liked about the School for Evil was that there were plenty of places to cry. She tucked behind a crumbling arch and sobbed. How would she ever face Tedros?
We insist you remove Sophie from the trial.
She recognized the gruff voice as Professor Manley's. She crept out of the archway and peeked through the keyhole into his putrid classroom. But where the rusted seats normally were filled with villains, now they were occupied by the faculty of both schools. Professor Dovey presided at the Dragon Skull lectern, which he'd brightened with a pumpkin paperweight.
The Nevers plan to kill her, Clarissa,
finished bald, pimpled Manly.
Bilious, we have secure measures in place to prevent a student's death.
Let's hope they're more secure than 4 years ago, he shot back.
I think we are all in agreement that Garrick's death was an accident,
Professor Dovey flared. The room was ominously silent. In the hall, Sophie could hear her own shallow breaths. Garrick of Gavaldon, taken with Bane. Bane had failed. Garrick had died. Her heart rattled against her ribs. Getting home alive is our happy ending. Agatha was right all along.
There is another reason Sophie must be removed from the trial, Castor said soberly. The fairies say she and the Everboy plan to act as a team.
As a team? Professor Dovey gaped. An ever and a never?
Imagine if they won, shrieked Professor Sheeks. Imagine if word got out in the woods.
So either she dies or destroys this school, Manly groused and spat on the floor.
Clarissa, this is an easy decision, said Lady Lesso. But there's no precedent for removing a qualified student from a trial,
Professor Dovey protested.
Qualified? She flunked every challenge this week, said Manly. The boy has convinced her she's good.
Perhaps she's just feeling the pressure of the trial, offered Princess Uma, feeding a quail on her shoulder.
Or she duped us all into thinking she was evil's great hope, Professor Sheik said. She should have failed before the trial.
Then why didn't she?
Professor Anemone asked.
Every time we tried to fail her, another student got last place instead, Manly said. Someone stopped her from failing.
Evil teachers clamored in furious agreement.
Makes perfect sense, Professor Dovey said over them. Some mysterious busybody who no one has ever seen flits through your tower, meddling with your ranks.
You describe the schoolmaster quite well, Clarissa, said Lady Lesso.
Don't be ridiculous, Lady Lesso. Why would the schoolmaster interfere with a student's ranks? Because he'd love nothing better than to see evil's best student win behind good's shield,
Lady Lesso hissed, violet eyes strobing.
A student who even I foolishly thought had hope. But if Sophie wins with that pathetic prince, I will not stand by, Clarissa. I will not allow the schoolmaster, nor you and your arrogant beasts, to destroy my life's work. Hear me now. Let Sophie compete in that trial, and you are risking more than just her life. You are risking war.
The room went dead silent. Professor Dovey cleared her throat.
Perhaps she can compete next year.
Sophie slumped in relief.
You cave to evil,
Professor Espada cried.
Only to protect the girl, Dovey said weakly. But the Everboy will still love her,
Anemone warned.
A week in the Doom Room will fix that, said Lady Lesso.
Still can't find the beast, said Sheba.
Then get a new one,
Lady Lesso snarled.
How about a vote,
chirped Uma.
Votes are for sissies,
Castor roared, and teachers burst into a rumpus. Uma's quail poop-bombed the evil teachers. Castor tried to eat the bird, and Pollux managed to lose his head again before someone whistled with loud authority. Everyone turned to the man standing in the corner of the burned room.
This school has one mission, and one mission only, said Professor Seder, to protect the balance between good and evil. If Sophie's participation in the trial disturbs this balance, then she must be disqualified, immediately. Luckily for us, the proof of this balance is in front of your eyes.
Everyone's gaze shifted. Sophie tried to see what they were looking at, then realized they were all looking in different directions.
"Are we in agreement? The balance is intact," said Professor Seder. No one argued. "Then Sophie will compete in the trial by tail, and we have nothing more to discuss." Sophie swallowed a scream.
"Always so sensible, August," said Lady Lesso, standing up. "Thankfully, the girl's failures have ensured she will spend most of the trial without the boy protecting her. Let us hope that she dies so brutally, no one would dare repeat her mistakes. Only then will her story have the ending it deserves. Perhaps one even fit for a painting."
She swept from the room, and the evil teachers followed her. As the good faculty filed out, muttering to each other in pairs, Professor Dovey and Professor Seder emerged last. They walked in silence, her high-necked chartreuse gown rustling against his shamrock green suit.
"What if she dies, August?" Clarissa asked.
"What if she lives?" said Seder.
Clarissa stopped.
"You still believe it's true?"
"I do. As do I believe it true the Storian started her fairy tale."
"But it's impossible. It's lunacy. It's..."
Clarissa flushed with horror.
"This is why you intervened?"
"On the contrary, I haven't intervened," Seder said. "Our duty is to let the story take its course."
"No! What have you..."
Professor Dovey's hand flew to her mouth.
"This is why you send a girl to risk her life? Because you believe your spurious prophecy?"
"There is far more at stake here than one girl's life, Clarissa."
"She's just a girl. An innocent girl,"
Professor Dovey gasped, welling furious tears.
"Her blood is on your hands."
As she fled, sniffles echoing down the stairs, Professor Seder's hazel eyes clouded with doubt. He couldn't see Sophie crouched next to him, trying to stop herself from shivering. Awash in the clearing's crinkly leaves, Kiko wrapped her shawl tighter and licked her spiced corn cob.
"So, I asked every girl if they'd said yes to Tristan, and they all said no. So that means he has to ask me. He could go alone, of course, but if a boy goes alone to the ball, he only gets half ranks, and Tristan likes using the groom room, so he'll definitely ask me. Well, Tristan could ask you, but you told him to marry Tedros, so I don't think he liked you. I can't believe you said that, as if princes could marry each other. Then what would we do?"
Agatha chomped on her cob to drown her out. Across the clearing, she saw Sophie and Tedros arguing ferociously in the mouth of the tree tunnel. It looked like Sophie was trying to apologize and embrace him, kiss him even, but Tedros shoved her away.
"Are you listening to me?"
Agatha turned. "Wait, so if a girl doesn't get asked to the ball, then she fails and suffers a punishment worse than death. But if a boy doesn't go to the ball, he gets half ranks. How is that fair?"
"Because it's the truth," Kiko said. "A boy can choose to be alone if he wants, but if a girl ends up alone, she might as well be dead."
Agatha swallowed. "That's ridiculous." Something dropped in her basket. Agatha glanced up to see Sophie meet her eyes as Tedros dragged her into the Evers line. As Kiko jabbered on, Agatha pulled a luscious pink rose bloom from her basket, then saw it was made of parchment. With the deftest care, she undid the flower in the lap of her dress. The note only had three words. "I need you."